Welcome to the Woodridge Baptist Church Podcast. For more information about what's happening in the life of our church, visit our website at www.woodridge.org. Enjoy the podcast.
Well, we have been in this series on Elijah and Elisha for a few weeks, and I'm pumping the brakes on that. We're going to come back to that. That's not going anywhere. But over the last several months, a number of pastors in the Houston area have been getting together. And some of the things that we have been discussing is the fact that we live in a very divided country right now, and we're divided on a number of fronts. We're divided politically, obviously, but you've also seen the issue of race take on a shape and a form that it hasn't in a long time. Not to say never, but in a long time. And so what we believe is that the church should be the place that really leads how this goes forward. We don't believe that the answer is primarily a political answer. We believe that the answer to what it is that is dividing us is a spiritual answer. And so for the next several weeks, we're going to be talking about race and the church. Now this week, I'm going to be talking about it. Now I go ahead and invite you to turn to John chapter 4, because that's where I'm going to be working from. And then next week, Hugh Poland, our discipleship pastor, is going to be teaching. And then the week after that, we've invited Pastor Bryant Lee, who's the pastor of Higher Expectations Church, which is a church plant of Woodridge Baptist Church, to come, and he's going to be preaching. We're going to be worshiping together. Higher Expectations and Woodridge are going to be worshiping together on Sunday morning, October 18th. We're going to be taking communion together that morning. I've invited our emeritus pastor, Greg Wallace, back to the church. He's actually been helping a church down in Houston for over a year and a half now. And so he's kind of putting them off for that Sunday morning so that he could be here with us and to lead us in communion. Because is there any better way to show the unity that we have in Jesus than taking the Lord's table together? Because I can't think of anything. And so for the next 3 weeks, this is what we're going to be talking about. Something that we need to be taking seriously, because Jesus wasn't silent about it. It's almost like when you go into a church and there are tough topics that you have to deal with. And I remember some years ago in the student ministry, they were going to start addressing some issues related to sexuality. And there were some parents that reached out to me and they said, well, I don't know how comfortable I am with this. I said, well, maybe you want to think of it like this. Satan's voice is really loud. Do you want God's voice to be heard or not? And if so, then it needs to be coming in your home, it needs to be coming from you, and it needs to be coming from those in the church that are trying to teach you so that you can be a good guide for your children on decisions that they have to make. Now, we can keep God's voice quiet, I just don't think that's wise. So we made the choice to go on with the series. Well, it's the same thing here. Some people are like, why are we going to be talking about these things? It's because the problem's still there. That's why we're talking about it. Why do we keep talking about gossip? It's because gossipers are still out there. You know, there are issues that just go, spiritually speaking, issues that just tend to linger. And it's the job and the responsibility of the church to open the Word of God, to rightly divide it, and so that we can go forward and confess whatever it is we need to confess to make right what we need to make right. Randy Pausch, some years ago, was dying, and he was brought onto Oprah. He was brought onto everything. He was a professor at Carnegie Mellon University. You can get the book. The book is called The Last Lecture, and he was giving a last lecture. Usually the last lecture is designated for professors that are retiring, and you kind of get your last shot at them, right? Randy Pausch, it was a little bit of a different situation because he wasn't so much retiring as he was dying. The reason that I bring Randy Pausch up in all of this is because when you think about the topic that we're talking about today, there's some things that just need to be said. And when we, especially as we handle these things in-house, you know, he's looking at the end of his life and he's trying to impart some wisdom. Especially, he said, here's the secret. I gave a last lecture and the lecture wasn't even for all of you people that heard it. He said, really, my last lecture is for my kids, because he wasn't going to physically be there to impart wisdom to them. You know what? This morning, the reason that I'm talking about these things is because, good Lord willing, and as I've prayed this up over the weeks, is that he will impart through me, God willing, impart some wisdom to us on how it is that we address this issue. And if there's something inside of you that you need to confess today, here's the good news. We're going to put it at the feet of Jesus, because he's quick to forgive and to move us on. So that's why we're doing this series. But before I turn to John chapter 4, there's a couple of things I want you to be mindful of. Later today, we are doing pie and cake. And it's a little bit different this year. For those of you who aren't part of Woodridge, we've been doing this for a lot of years. And usually we get together in the gym, and all of our students have made pies and cakes, and we bid on these things, and all of that money goes towards student ministry related to camp and mission trips and stuff like that. Well, we can't do it like that this year, you know, because we don't want you to have a COVID-infested cake. It's because we love you. So instead, we're doing a telethon. And so there's going to be a lot of things happening from 5 to 8 o'clock today. You can go and you can tap in. Just go to the website. You can tap in. You can give throughout both today. You can give throughout the week. But you have been an incredible blessing to our students and to our kids through this event. A lot of them, the cost of camp goes down for them. And for others, they would have never had the opportunity to go to camp, but they get to go because of you. And so we don't want anyone to be robbed of that opportunity or to be on mission or on the mission trips. And so we invite you to be a part of that today from 5 to 8 o'clock this evening. I have my part in it. I have my part in it. And that's all I'm going to say. I have my part in it. I was asked to do gross stuff. And so you get to watch that. But tap in and you get to see what's going on. Please, please be a part of that. And then later in the month, on October 24th, we're just going to have a time where we have some fun. We're going to have a family fun night here at the church. We're going to have live music. We're going to have games. We're going to have food. You know why? It's because sometimes it's good just to do something fun, isn't it? And so whether you're an adult, we're going to have stuff for you. Students, we got stuff for you. Kids, we got stuff for you. And so put that on your calendar. It's not just for Woodridge. It is for our community. And if that's something you want to be a part of, we would love to have you. But for now, I want to look at John chapter 4. Are y'all ready? Okay. Here's what's going on. In John 4, Jesus is really starting to gain some popularity. Now, before, you probably remember this guy named John the Baptist. And, you know, he's out in the sticks eating weird food, and he dresses funny. And all of these people still flock out to him because he's such a powerful speaker. He's anointed by God to do great things. But he's really only the guy before the real guy, because the real guy is Jesus, one that he says, you know, I'm not really fit to stoop and to even strap his sandals for him. I mean, this guy's greater than me. But Jesus is gaining popularity. He's baptizing more people than John. He's rising in prominence. And Jesus is leaving Judea. He's going into an area called Galilee. But to do so, he has to pass through this area called Samaria. Well, here's the catch. No Orthodox Jew at that time passed through Samaria. None of them would do it. And the reason that they wouldn't do it is because they would have to come in contact with what they would call the dogs. That's what they called them. If you go through Samaria, you go into the area where the Samaritans are. And if you go into the area where the Samaritans are and you're a Jew, you looked at them as other animals. And so they would just hook right around Samaria, even if it was circuitous. You know, instead of a straight line, we'll go around them because we don't even want to touch them. Because they're dogs. Now, a little bit of background on how that even came about, because you see something like that and you go, well, what caused the friction? I mean, did they hate each other just from the word go, or was there something going on? And there is a little bit of background. And as you can imagine, when you see divisions between people, you probably need to ask this question. What's the story there? I mean, what's going on that one group would hate another group that much? I'll give you a little bit of the background, only a little bit. In 722 BC, there was a group called the Assyrians, and they invaded Israel. And when they invaded Israel, they took many Jews back to Assyria with them. But what they also did is they transplanted a lot of Assyrians in Israel. And what happened was, is they started to take the people as their own. They started to intermarry with each other. The interracial marriages, by the way, created a new group of people called the Samaritans, usually referred to by Jews as half-breeds. You're not really a Jew because you mixed with them. And so some static kind of grew out as a result. Now, let me be clear. There's nothing here in John 4 or somewhere else that says, oh, and by the way, that means that if you're white, you can't marry a black person. Or if you're Hispanic, you can't marry a black person or whatever. It's not that at all. The problem had to do with what was happening in the intermarriage, because you have a different set of religious beliefs and practices that they're now trying to hook together like that was going to work. And that wasn't going to work. So their religion was a mixture of foreign gods with Judaism. You see this in 2 Kings chapter 17. So they're divided. Well, how divided were they? How about this? When the exiles are returning, you know, the people get cast out, the Assyrians have kind of blitzed them out. Well, while the exiles from the southern kingdom of Judah are returning from Babylon, the Samaritans offered to help them rebuild their temple. Now, how cool would that be? I mean, imagine that this building here gets destroyed, right? And now let's imagine for a second that we had an arch enemy. We don't, but work with me, right? Let's imagine that we had an arch enemy and we're coming back into Kingwood. As we come back into Kingwood, we see our places in ruins and our enemy comes up to us and says, you know what, we'll help you build your place of worship back. Now that would be an awesome expression of trying to get back together, don't you think? It would be awesome. That actually happened. We know this from the book of Ezra. It also is mentioned in the book of Nehemiah. So the Samaritans offered help rebuild the temple, but the Jews viewed them as foreign enemies and said, thanks for the offer, but we can do it without you. That's a lot of static. Then in about 400 BC, the Samaritans built a rival temple on top of Mount Gerizim. The Jewish leader, there's a Jewish leader named John Hyrcanus, and John Hyrcanus burned it down in 122 BC. So let's go to their most sacred space and let's burn it to the ground. How do you think that went? Not well. It didn't improve relationships between the two groups, and the Samaritans, just to show how divided, the Samaritans would only accept the Pentateuch, or the first five books of the Old Testament, as given by God, rather than all of the Jewish scriptures. Can you see how divided these people are? And I'm just giving you a thumbnail sketch because there's more history than what I'm giving you. All that in mind, this is what helps us understand John chapter 4. And so I'm going to start reading in verse 4, and I invite you to read with me. Now he, this is Jesus, now he had to go through Samaria. Question, did he really have to go through Samaria? Nope, because what did most Orthodox Jews do before? They went around it. But Jesus had to go through Samaria. And he came to a town in Samaria called Sychar, near the plot of ground that Jacob had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there. Now that's kind of a sacred spot, right? Jacob's well was there, and Jesus, tired as he was from the journey, sat down by the well. It was about noon. Now let me tell you how tired Jesus is, because saying he's kind of tired isn't really it. Jesus is so tired, it says he sat down by the well. No, he literally just kind of falls down on the ground by the well. This guy is exhausted. So when a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, will you give me a drink? Now his disciples had gone into the town to buy food. Now call it a hunch, I think Jesus sent them out for a reason. It's just kind of a hunch. So he's like, guys, we're hungry. I want you to go into town, fetch some burgers. And so off they go. Jesus is sitting on the ground. And the Samaritan woman says to him, because he says, hey, can I have a drink? And the Samaritan woman says to him, you're a Jew and I'm a Samaritan woman. I mean, how can you ask me for a drink? Because Jews do not associate with Samaritans. Now that seems like a fair question to ask, doesn't it? You're asking me for a drink. A couple of things here though. Notice right off the bat, they haven't had any previous encounter with each other, at least not that we've seen so far. This is kind of their first hello. And she looks at him and says, hey, you're a Jew. Well, how did she know that? There probably were some things about Jesus that showed he was from a different place. It could be maybe in the way that he looked. It could be maybe in the way that he talked. It's kind of like Peter later on at the time of the crucifixion of Jesus. And they're like, aren't you the guy that follows Jesus? And how did they identify? You kind of have that Galilean thing to your, it's like you have your Texas drawl, right? There are just some characteristics that when you're talking to people, they go, you're not from here, right? And it may have been something like that. Maybe she just looked at him and said, this guy's different. He looks different than me. He sounds different than me. But here's the thing. This did not do anything to stop Jesus from reaching somebody else. He has an opportunity, and he took it. He took it. Now remember, this cultural gap has been around since 722 BC. 722 BC, that's a long time. It isn't a decade old. It's hundreds and hundreds of years that these groups have been fighting with each other. And now you can see why. When he says, hey, can I have a drink? That she's like, what? What? We don't hang with each other. It's just not what we do. And this is why the symbol of the cup in this story matters so much. It matters so much. Drinking from her cup's a big deal. It would be like, think about it this week, it would be like a white man in the South during the time of segregation, not just in the schools, but when you have people that are literally not drinking from the same fountain, and you have one fountain that is labeled whites, and you have another fountain that is labeled coloreds, and you know exactly what I'm talking about. It would be like living in that time where they had separate everything, and it would be like going back into that time and for a white man to ask a black woman if he could have a drink, not from her fountain, but from the cup she's drinking from. It's like that. You think that would have stuck out a little bit to people watching? Because it sticks out to her. And you add this to the fact that it wasn't just that she's a Samaritan, she's a woman as well. And no Orthodox Jew would be caught in the middle of the day taking a drink from a woman or speaking to her in public. And Jesus says, it's enough of that. It's enough of that. Here's another cultural moment. You would like to think, you know, say it once and everybody gets it and you move on from it. I'd love to say this is the end of the fighting, but it isn't the end of the fighting. Think of two heroes of the Christian faith. Think of Peter and Paul, right? And if you looked over at Galatians chapter 2, you have Peter is sitting down and you have groups that are eating, kind of a mixed bag, Gentiles and Jews and so forth. And what Peter does is he ticks Paul off. And the reason that he ticks Paul off is Paul has to correct him because Peter wouldn't eat with Gentiles because he was afraid of what Jews would think of him. So literally, you got a group sitting over here at the table, and he goes, you know, I'm just not going to eat with these people. That just ain't going to happen. Again, you would love to think that all you got to do is say something one time and we can all move on from the foolishness. It just doesn't work like that. You got to know somebody as big as Peter doing the exact same thing. Peter was a leader, and that makes it even worse. It makes it even worse. So his choice to lead all of the other Jewish people at his table, which is what he does, including a guy named Barnabas. Barnabas, who was the guy that looks at Paul and says, I know you've been killing us, but I'm willing to take you to my guys because Barnabas was the helper. Even Barnabas got up from the table and walks off. He follows Peter's lead. And Paul says, what are you doing? What is the matter with you? He calls him out. Here, what you see in this story is that Jesus gives a completely different example. He gives a completely different example. His life in this moment proves something about the lesson that was going to come to these guys. He did what his people wouldn't. You know why? Because it was the right thing to do. I've shared this story with you before. I'm gonna share it with you again for those of you that haven't heard it. But one of the things that blessed me the most when I was doing my grandfather's funeral some years ago, I think November of 2002, if I remember right, I was doing his funeral. Not just that he was a decorated World War II hero, even though he was. It was the stories of the people that came and talked to me after the funeral was over with, as they are teachers. Both of my grandparents are teachers in Northeast Texas. Segregation is real. And there were some people, and you had the tracks. You know what I'm talking about. You had the tracks. And the school, McFarland High School in Mineola, Texas, did not have the books that they needed. They were not equipped to provide the education that they should be providing for those kids. And we would love to say that race wasn't a factor, but race was a factor. And so there were families that were literally coming to my grandparents and asking them if they would teach them. Even though they knew that they'd already been teaching all day, would you be willing to teach my kid? Because they wanted their kid to get the best education that their kid could possibly get. And in spite of the fact that it was in a time of segregation, my grandparents said, absolutely, 100%. And where they taught them was in their own home, after they had already worked all day, because it was the right thing to do. It was the right thing to do. I look at that story with tremendous pride, not because of what the culture was saying, because had they listened to the culture, they wouldn't have done it. But because they gave an example, much like what Jesus is going to give to this lady and to that community here in a little bit, you do the right thing because it's the right thing. And this lady, by the way, her reaction to Jesus, she's pretty stunned. Wouldn't you be? Hundreds of years of hate. He's like, can I have a sip? What's going on? So Jesus answers her, verse 10. If you knew the gift of God and who it is that asks you for a drink, you would have asked him and he would have given you living water. And by the way, this is an image of the Holy Spirit. He would give you something that will continue to give you nourishment for your soul. And the woman says, verse 11, "Sir, you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. Where can you get this living water? I mean, are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well and drank from it himself, as did also his sons and his livestock?" And Jesus answered, "Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks the water I give them is never going to thirst. Indeed, the water I give them will become in them a spring of water welling up to eternal life." And so he told her, "I want you to go call your husband and come back." Now things are about to get interesting. "Go call your husband and I want you to come back." Remember, she's alone in the middle of the day because she's a social outcast. And so she says this, "I don't have a husband." And Jesus says, "That's exactly right, you don't. You don't have a husband. You're right when you say you don't. And the fact is, you have had five husbands, and the man you now have is not your husband. What you have just said is quite true." You think he caught her attention a little bit? "Yeah, I know. You've already had five. And the guy that you're shacking up with right now is another one. That'd be six." He's got her attention. "Sir," the woman said, "I can see that you're a prophet." I'd probably say the same thing too. I mean, on the one hand, you sit there going, "I'd like a sip of water." The next thing, he's talking about who's in the bed with her at night. You think that would have her attention? He's got it. "Sir, I see that you're a prophet. Our ancestors worshiped on this mountain." You remember the temple that was built on Mount Gerizim? "Watch this though. But you Jews claim that the place where we must worship is in Jerusalem." Oh my. So here she is talking to Jesus, and what does she say? "You Jew? Think that went well?" I mean, on the one hand, they have this good conversation going with each other. Next thing you know, she's calling him a racial slur. Static's going both ways. Can you see it? And then Jesus says, "Woman." All right, now when Jesus says that, do you know what I mean? Where I come from, we would say, he's about to shuck some corn, if you know what that phrase means. "Woman, believe me, a time is coming when you will worship the Father neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You Samaritans worship what you don't know. We worship what we do know, for salvation is from the Jews." She may be sitting there going, "What? So you ruled us out again?" He's sitting there going, "Hold on. Yet a time is coming and now has come when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and in truth, for they are the kind of worshipers the Father seeks. God is spirit, and his worshipers must worship in spirit and in truth." So she, notice this, she jumps on the race thing, and Jesus goes, "Now hold on, because who is God? God is what? Spirit. God is spirit. He's not identifying with this group. He is not identifying with this group. One day, we all will come together. We will worship in spirit and in truth." Earlier, when race was an issue, Jesus doesn't even make a comment. Doesn't say a thing. But when she starts talking about race and God, he's like, "Stop. Stop it. Cut it out." She brings up race in relation to Jesus' father, you know, the place that we worship, our ancestors before. And it shows us this. A people's history can impact the way that they see other people, can it? People's history can and will impact the way that they see other people. Yours too. Yours too. Why did this lady say this? It's because of hundreds and hundreds of years of division and hate. It's why she's saying it. It's everything that she interprets it from. All of her experience before. All the Jews going all the way around Samaria because we don't want to touch the dogs. That's how she's interpreting everything from. And Jesus is trying to say there's a better thing because, I mean, behind her is Mount Gerizim where they worshiped. And this is the lesson. Sometimes your theology is not theology. Please hear what I'm saying. Sometimes your theology is not theology. It is your history, and you are confusing the difference between the two. This lady was confusing the difference between the two. Real worship has to come from the right motivation, Jesus says. It's got to come from your spirit, and it also has to connect to who God really is. That's just the truth. And so the woman says this to him in verse 25. The woman says, now I know that the Messiah called the Christ is coming, and when he comes, he's going to explain everything to us. So she seems to have something going on that's right. She's looking for the deliverer. And then Jesus said, gotcha moment. Well, I, the one that is speaking to you, I'm he. I know that the Christ is coming. That's right. And it's me. Now, how would you react in that moment? And don't act spiritual right now. Quit it. Yeah. Oh, that's great. You're the one that I've been looking for. Maybe, maybe not. Except for the fact that he had pointed out a few things about her before that probably had arrested her attention, just like it would you. Remember the five guys and the one you shacked up with? I am him. I'm him. And so just then his disciples returned, and they were surprised to find him talking with a woman. Now you know why they're surprised. A woman that's a Samaritan. You don't talk to either one of them. She's kind of got the double portion of it, right? They're surprised. But no one asked, what do you want, or why are you talking with her? Oh, man. Guys, this is not the best moment. See, Jesus sends them off to get the snacks. They come walking back in, and what are they saying? What are you talking to this lady for? Moment is almost ruined because of the, quote, followers of Jesus. But the moment's not over, thank goodness, because there's more going on here. That wasn't their best reaction. And then she leaves her water jar. The woman goes back to the town, and she says to the people, come see a man who told me everything I ever did. Could this be the Messiah? And the result is they came out of the town, and they made their way toward him. They made their way toward him. This lady, who doesn't have any social standing whatsoever, probably a bit of an outcast in the community. We know that because of when she's coming to the well to get her water. She just doesn't fit with the rest of the ladies. Everybody views her as dirty, as a woman that is disconnected, doesn't follow God, hooking up with a lot of guys. And she goes back into the village, a woman that, it's not like the president walking in, it's that lady walking in saying, I think I just met the Lord. Do y'all want to come meet him? And what you have happen from a woman that is at a well, a divinely appointed moment with Jesus, begins a revival in a village that needs it. It needs it. So meanwhile, his disciples urged him, Rabbi, have something to eat. After all, it was about 5 miles one way to get the food. It's about another 5 miles back to deliver the food. So they did that work. They're ready for Jesus to get his snacks. Rabbi, eat something. But he said to them, oh, I have food to eat that you know nothing about. They're probably, well, where'd you get that from? And why did you just send us on a journey, right? I have food to eat that you know nothing about. And his disciples said to each other, could someone have brought him food? But Jesus says, my food is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work. That's my food. Don't you have a saying, it's still 4 months until the harvest? Well, I tell you, open your eyes, look at the fields. They're ripe for the harvest. And even now, the one who reaps draws a wage and harvests a crop for eternal life, so that the sower and the reaper may be glad together. Thus the saying, one who sows and another reaps, is true. It's true spiritually. Sometimes you invest in the life of a person spiritually and you don't see them come to Jesus. 3 years later, somebody else shares the gospel, they come to Jesus. The saying, the one sows and the other reaps, is true. I sent you to reap what you have not worked for. Others have done the hard work and you have reaped the benefits of their labor. What is Jesus doing? Did you see it here? He says, guys, you got the Mount Gerizim behind. You got a field in front. The lady has left. She's gone into the village saying, do you want to come and meet a guy that I think is the Lord that we've been looking for? The people come out the other way toward Jesus. Jesus is looking out saying, okay, guys, here's your moment. I want you to look out at the field. Who's in the field? The Samaritans are in the field coming toward them. And he says, the harvest is there. Harvest is there. Now those guys know that they have a choice they have to make, don't they? Because for what these guys are looking at, they have an opportunity to say, I'm going to follow Jesus's lead, and I'm going to love people because they're created in the image of God. I'm going to give them the message that they need, which is the Lord. And we're going to do it that way. But Jesus is putting it in their lap at this point. There's the harvest, guys. What are you going to do? What are you going to do? You don't have to wait. Remember, he says, you have the saying, harvest is in 4 months. No, it's right there. What are you going to do? Here's the result. It's the beautiful part of the story. In verse 39, it says, many of the Samaritans from that town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. He told me everything I ever did. So when the Samaritans came to him, they urged him to stay with them, and he stayed 2 days. And because of his words, many more became believers. Revival. Revival. So they at least got this one right. They share the gospel with the people. Jesus, who at this one moment is this kind of separated from this lady, like she's getting the division between the two. Next thing you know, they're saying, hey, why don't you stick around and hang with us for a little bit? Why? It's because this is what you can find when you do things God's way. This is what you can find when you do things God's way. Many of the Samaritans from that town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. Something I want you to think about this morning, my friends. Something I want you to keep in mind. Something that really hit me this week as I was looking at this lady's story. She goes into the village, and what does she say? There's a guy that knows everything about me. He knows everything about me. Man. I want to say something to you this morning. He knows everything about you too. Everything about you too. Everything about me too. And the hope that I had as we were coming into this morning, one, is that we would see how it is that in Jesus, these divisions that are unnecessary, those walls can come down. I hope that you've seen that this morning. This is something that God can do. But I love this part of her story, because what Jesus does is he calls her out for all of her mistakes. But did you notice what he gave her in return? It wasn't guilt. It wasn't shame. It was forgiveness. It was forgiveness. He knows every single thing about you. Don't fool yourself. And were he here and not me, he'd be a better pastor, no doubt. But maybe you could have this moment with the Lord where you're sitting out at the atrium or something, and he says, come here for a second. Yeah, I know everything about you. And then he names it. The offer for her is the same offer as for you. It's the same. And it's the one that I accepted many years ago because I knew it to be true. I'm a sinner that needs to be saved by grace. So we end our services every single Sunday the same way. We love to do two things. We love to pray. We love to talk to the Lord. And then we love to worship because he's worthy of it. He's worthy of it. So this morning, here's what I'm encouraging you to do. In a moment of honesty, you're going to have a time where you bow your heads and you just talk to the Lord. Maybe you sit here and you look at the story and you say, well, you know, Jeremy, I'm not necessarily struggling with racism. That's fine. I'm going to take you at your word this morning. I don't think that everybody does. I think some people do. Some people do. But I guarantee you there is a struggle somewhere. And we want to take in this moment of time to put that struggle at the feet of the Lord and know that just like for the Samaritan woman, his grace is sufficient for her, his grace is sufficient to you. And for all who call out on the name of the Lord, you will be saved, and his forgiveness can be yours today.
We hope you have enjoyed the podcast. For more information about our church, visit www.woodridge.org.